Okay, so now in details of, or more detail on the Abhigamana, is that when we, so this includes waking up, remembering the Lord, offering obeisance as the spiritual master, then using the toilet and cleaning oneself before bathing, taking a bath, the Vaishnava dress, tilak, achman, chanting Gayatri, and then cleaning and decorating the temple. So, the whole idea is that we should always be remembering the Lord and never forgetting the Lord. So then, this would mean that the first thing one does when one wakes up is remember the Lord. When the living entities come out of Mahavishnu after they've been asleep for, you know, very long time, then when they come out, then the first thing they do is remember all of their previous material desires. It's the first thing they remember. So even though they've had such a nice break, they've been staying with the Lord in the Lord's body, immediately upon waking up, they remember their material desires. So because of this, then the whole material scene just starts all over again. Wherever we left off, we just continue like that. So then the Pancharatrik process, the idea is that we may have been doing like this since time immemorial, but now when we wake up, now we should remember Krishna. And then think how to dedicate today, the day for Krishna. So this is, yeah. So when we take rest the evening before, then generally we offer our activities to the Lord, whatever we've done for the day, to the Lord, to the spiritual master. And it's very interesting if we actually just take a moment and just think through all the things we did in the day, then it becomes kind of like, then one can see very nicely how much one has been engaged or not. Because at the end of the day, you just think, okay, what service I did? And okay, well, in the morning, I kind of chanted some rounds, I kind of stayed awake, and then, you know, and then we, you know, attended the class and fell asleep, and then we did some service during the day, then we spaced out on that, and then in the evening we took darshan of the deities, and then that's it. And then we think, wow, tomorrow I have to do better. Right? But unless we do this, we think the whole day went by nicely, you know, very solid, you know, pucker day, you know, I worked hard and all that. But if we actually think back over it, then we see either it was a very full, nice day, or it wasn't. So generally the devotee, even though it was a nice day, wonderful, he'll generally always find his own, you know, this was good. Okay, we did fall asleep when we were chanting our rounds this morning, but did we concentrate? Did we hear? Were we thinking about Krishna? So this way, even when one comes to a very advanced stage, one still has something to think about and in offering, because one is always trying to improve the offering, improve what one has done. So this is the recommended process. Before one goes to sleep, then one thinks, goes through what one's done and thinks, tomorrow I will do better. And then when he wakes up, then immediately, because that was the last thing he was thinking before, he took rest. But when he wakes up, then yes, today I have to be more determined. I'm going to do this, this, like this. We make that determination. So the determination is made in the day, in the morning, and then we review it in the evening. So like that, then we can see step by step we will go. And if we're able to do this, we will find the process of anartha nivritti becomes much easier. Because then it's very easy to see what are the anarthas. Because you have the ability to contemplate what you've done, which is the meaning of anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti means we contemplate what it is that we are not doing right in devotional service. It means consciously we are aware. If we are unconscious, this is bhajana kriya. We are performing the devotional activities, you know, we're properly connected to the spiritual master, but we are not conscious of removing the anarthas. So that's bhajana kriya. So that's proper. Good situation. But the devotional process will be purified. So as we become purified, then the next stage is becoming aware of our faults, not of someone else's. Our faults. If we're not careful, then Maya is very clever. We'll become more purified, and then we'll be more sensitive to faults, but not our own faults. But to everyone else's in the universes except ours. And even sometimes beyond the universe. Sometimes even devotees blame Krishna. So they are able to find faults, but it's supposed to be their own. So this practice is very simply done by just every evening, just going through what one's done, just quickly. You don't have to necessarily get into sleep, whatever comes very easily. And you just look for what you did properly. And then when one goes through that, one will see it was either a lot or not so much. And then naturally after that, then you're going to think this could have been improved. So then you make the determination, tomorrow I'm going to improve. And when we wake up, we remember that determination, and then we confess. So that is the point here. Then we wake up in the morning, remember the Lord first thing. Then what is our connection to the Lord? Right? That is through the spiritual master. So then we offer obeisance to the spiritual master. And then, at that point, then whatever we thought the night before, this is what today I'm going to try to be more determined in this. Because the spiritual master, he is serving, and we are assisting him. Like that. Then, after that, then we will, tidy up the bed. If it's something like we're sleeping on the floor, it should be rolled up, put away. And if it's not, if it's a regular bed, it should be made up. Not later, at this time. It should be made up and that, so it is looks nice. One is just a practice to keep clean and orderly. The second thing is that then it does it somehow or other, the bed when it's rolled up, or you fold all the sheets nicely and put the bed cover on nicely, the bed it loses its mystic powers. Just to be able to draw you back inside. Like that. It's a very essential element. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very strict on this point. He said the brahmacharya, as soon as they got up, they had to roll up the bed and put it away. Because then it's not so advice. It doesn't keep calling. Right? Because if it's just there, waiting, it's just so easy to go and lay down. But if you have to go, get it out, roll it out, set it up, then generally you'll think, well, maybe I should chant my rounds, right? So it's an important element, is that cleaning oneself, cleaning the room, either at that time, because the feet aren't clean, you've been in the bed, you get out of the bed to take care of the bed, put it away, the floor becomes contaminated, so the floor needs to be cleaned. And then after you go, use the toilet, cleaning yourself properly, and all. Then we brush the teeth. So brushing the teeth, then we're trying to make sure that all the teeth are clean. So we should not overly spend time, but we should not spend too less time. We should not think, well, this is Maya taking care of the body. As long as we are attached to the body, meaning we identify with the body, or we have to use this body, then we have to take care of it nicely. That does not mean overtaking care, but it must be done nicely. The teeth must be properly cleaned. The tongue must be properly cleaned. The mouth must be properly washed. Like that. And then after we take our bath, then bath should be taken nicely. Then after the bath, then we get dressed. So now the whole idea is now in this time of the day, we're trying to, Yes, we follow the culture and the different things that Krishna is giving us. So one of them is how we dress. We just saw in the Manasamhita mentioned that the Brahmana, according to his age, position, wealth, all this, then he should accordingly dress, think, and speak. So then our dress should match what we're thinking and speaking. So we're talking about Krishna, we're thinking about Krishna, our dress should also be you know, in connection with Krishna, like that. So therefore, it should all match. So the dress is important. We're dressing nicely, we're dressing to please Krishna, you know. Everybody has their, you know, the conditioned nature, so you like to please Krishna dressing in one way or another, but it must also match properly socially, you know, one's position in the society. Just like if one's a brahmachari and doesn't dress too fancy, he's a grihastha, maybe more fancy, but then according to his position, if he's younger or older, then they will dress accordingly. Like I was in Calcutta in the one shop where they sell wool chadars. And I was asking for some plain chadars, because in India, gray chadars, gray, dark browns, things like that, are generally worn by older people, like that. The younger people wear a little bit more brighter colors, or, you know, lighter, like lighter browns, but the grays, heavy, all these things are generally for the younger people, and plain. The younger ones like all the nice little, you know, embroideries on it, and this and that. So I was asking for some plain, simple stuff. And he says, "Why I don't have a stock this year much." He says, "Because no one's coming and buying." You know? And then he commented, "I don't know what has happened to all the old people. You know, did they just evaporate or just, what happened? They went to another planet?" Because they would always, every year, be coming and buying all the, you know, very simple and maybe subdued kind of, you know, plain things. But he says, no one's coming, you know. So according to one's, you know, age, position, you know, like that, then accordingly we should dress. Then, the important element is for the men, then the dhoti and the chadar. That means one is dressed. Then according to the situation, the weather, then one may wear shirts or bugle bundis, other things like that. The dhoti and chadar means one is dressed, and what is the suitable dress for, you know, temple activities, deity worship and that. Then for the ladies, then that would be wearing a sari, because that is the standard dress in the spiritual realm. So you see that Krishna is always wearing dhoti and chadar. And then sometimes when it's winter or something, when it's not as cool, I mean when it's not as hot, you'll see him, sometimes he's wearing bugle bundis. But he's still wearing the chadar. So the chadar and dhoti is always wearing. And then you'll see the gopis are always wearing their saris. So these are the standard spiritual dresses. So, what is it? Yeah, in English you have a saying that imitation is a form of flattery. But if someone imitates you, then they like what you're doing. Right? Some people get upset that why is wearing what I wear. But that means they like what you wear. So by wearing the dress and everything that Krishna and the residents of the spiritual realm wear, then this is natural that we're appreciating them and their qualities, and we like to wear in the same way. So like that. Then after then the specific markings of the Vaishnav, because anyone who follows Vedic culture will wear the dhoti, chadars, saris like this. But in that you may have those who are devotees and who are not. So then specifically then the Vaishnav chinna, or the identification of Vaishnav, is wearing of tilak, wearing of the neck beads, then wearing of the Brahman thread. Then these, well actually wearing a Brahman thread is also in the same category as the dress. Specifically the tilak and the neck beads. So the tilak and the neck beads, these are essential elements of initiation. The Pancharatrika initiation has five elements. The first is tapa or mudra. The second is pundra. Third is nama. Fourth is mantra. And fifth is yaga. So the first, the mudra, or tapa, that is the wearing of the shankha and chakra on the body, or the neck beads. So depending upon your sampradaya, then one of these is going to be prominent. So what it signifies is that we understand that the material world is a place of misery. So one who understands that the material world is not the place of enjoyment, that is signified by the mudra, the wearing of the neck beads. So they're not just a fashion, you know, they're not just something to make business out of, but they're actually part of our initiation. Right? That someone who comes forward and understands that they want to get serious about spiritual life, because the material world is a place of suffering, it's not a place of enjoyment, wears the neck beads. And other sampradayas, they'll brand themselves with hot irons of Shankhya chakra. It's the same thing. It means the same thing. It's something spiritual that signifies that we always wear on the body, that signifies that, you know, this is our proclivity. We're not interested in the material endeavor. Like that. So, yeah. So that is the mudra. Then the next is pundra. It's the tilak. So the pundra is the urdva. We wear urdva pundra. The kind of tilak we wear is called urdva pundra. Urdva means upwards. So the urdva pundra then signifies the urdvati, the upward path. But means we have given up the idea that the material world is the place of endeavor. You know, for us. So then, what are we going to do? We're living entities. We're active. So we must do something. So then the natural thing is that we're going to take the upward path. So the upward path means to the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? To the service of the Lord. So that we wear that, we wear the urdhva pundra. So that signifies someone who has now, after understanding the material world's a place of misery, now makes the determination to serve the Lord. So that is pundra. So these two aspects are very important for the spiritual aspirant. That they must wear these. They should know what they are. These are the first two elements of the initiation. Then, when one is more serious, that one accepts, receives the holy name from somebody, and he accepts a name that signifies that he is servant of the Lord. Like Krishna Das, you know, Govinda Dasi, like this. We are servant of Krishna. So that's the nama. Then the fourth is mantra, which means that you receive the mantraatric Gayatris, or we may also receive the Vedic Brahma Gayatri, and then that is shown by one who has the thread. And then the fifth is yaga, or worship of the deity, right? According to the Pancharatrik rules and regulations. So that is given to us here. So this Vaishnava Chinna means we are those aspects of the Pancharatrik purifications, the purificatory rites of the Pancharatrik system to establish us as a bona fide sampradayic devotee. Then those are accepted. We see that we are wearing them, that we are using them. Then sipping water for purification is achman. After that, they perform achman. And we discussed that before. And then we chant the Gayatri Mantra. So the Gayatri Mantra is dealing with our approach to the Supreme Lord. See, the mantra is Kama Gayatri. The Brahma Gayatri, yes. For approaching Krishna's Kamadev, then we must approach Guru and Gauranga. These mantras are there. The Brahma Gayatri is simply there for the purpose of the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He wanted to establish that the Vaishnav is automatically Brahman. So the minimum you accept them as is a Brahman. Right? So like that, because these preachers were going out and they would naturally ask, well, what is your gotra, what is your line? And then they try to figure out where they fit in the mundane social system and then try to figure if they are more advanced or less advanced, whatever it is. Who's superior? Like that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore gave all his brahmacharis, his preachers, all the Brahman threads when they got the Pancharatrik initiation, because then people would accept them as Brahmins. Right? But otherwise, previous to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, The Brahma Gayatri wasn't taken that seriously. The Brahma Gayatri is for the purpose of raising us to the platform of Brahman, or to Brahma Bhuta. It does not go beyond that. You know? It is an assistant to the Kama Gayatri only. So that can help us realize that we're not our body. But the other Gayatris, then they are how you say it? They manifest from Golok. Right? They are from there. Kama Gayatri. After the Hare Krishna mantra comes Kama Gayatri. That is the first expansion. And from Kama Gayatri come all the other Gayatris. And then the last of that is the Brahma Gayatri. Then in the material world, then first comes Om, Bhurbhuva Swaha, then the Brahma Gayatri, then Purusha Shukta, then the Veda. So it comes out in the material world the opposite way. Because it's a reflection. Right? What's closest to the water of the tree, the root of the tree, is the first thing you see in the water. And then what is on the top here, you see on the bottom over there. Therefore, in the material world, sometimes they consider Brahma Gayatri is the highest, and the other Gayatris, these are secondary. You know, they're nice, you know, not so important. But Brahma Gayatri is important. But for us, it's the other way around. Because we don't deal as much with the reflection as we do with the original. Right? We will see the reflection in relation to the original. Like that. We see the both. While others just see the reflection only. You know? But according to the Vedic viewpoint. And then there are those who only see the reflection but not according to the Vedas. That is the most unfortunate. So the Brahma Gayatri is just Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave that. Because before him, if the devotee was from a Brahmin family and they received Upanayanam, where they got the Brahma Gayatri, then they would wear the thread, they would chant it. And if they didn't bother. Just at the time of initiation, they were giving the Pancharatrik mantras, the Guru, Gaur, and Kama Gayatris. So they just chanted those, just on their fingers. They didn't keep the thread or use a thread. The thread is for the Brahma Gayatri. It should be very clear. The thread is for the Brahma Gayatri. It's not for the Kama Gayatri. Right? Like that. The Brahman thread shows that one has the Brahma Gayatri. And one is therefore accepted as a Brahman. The Pancharatrik means that you're a Vaishnav, which means above that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't want his preachers being seen lower than that. That's all. So that is the point there. So the chant for the Gayatri then is done, and with the purpose of remembering Krishna. Like that. So then the mantra should be remembered. One should try to know the meaning. One should try to meditate on the different parts. The Gayatri is always in three parts, so that each part has its meaning. One should try to remember that while chanting. If need be, it's recommended you can make a slight pause between each section, and then that helps us concentrate. So you say the bead syllable, and then a pause, then the first pada, then a pause, second pada, third pause, then the bija again. Like that, then one can chant. Then the last aspect of Abhigamana is cleaning the temple, decorating the temple, cleaning all the paraphernalia, the group's cleaning of the paraphernalia. You polish it and wash it and all that. That's all part of Abhigamana. All those kind of things. Where oneself, the temple, the place, the paraphernalia is all being cleaned with the external form of it's being cleaned. That is all Abhigamana. And when you're cleaning subtly, the subtle purification, that's all part of yoga during the puja. Okay, so that is the what's happening in Abhigamana. Any questions on this? Yes.
But you say the shrine is only for the Brahma Gayatri. Then we shouldn't use it when we talk the dog bathroom.
No, we use it. I'm saying the many times I've seen many devotees saying that, well, we have the Gayatris. You know? And before the Gayatris were not given. Gayatris were always given. But the Pancharatri Gayatris. The Brahman Gayatri, only if someone was in the Brahman family, they accepted it. You know, in modern times. Before it was accepted by all the Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya. But so that signifies that someone is then, how you say, he is qualified to perform sacrifice. That is there. But we know that the real qualification to perform sacrifice is the chanting of the holy name and the Pancharatri Gayatri. Because the Vedic Gayatri, the Vedic culture is all support to sadhana. And the sadhana and the Pancharatri Gayatris are all a support to the Bhagavad, to the chanting of the holy name and teaching of the holy name. So we know very nicely we have to understand these three levels. Because we are initiated in all three. We have the Bhagavad, we have the Pancharatrik, and we have the Vedic. And of the three, the actual essential is the Bhagavad. And if we're conditioned, then the support of that with the Pancharatrik. Basically, the Brahma Gayatri is just a matter of teaching. It's not that significant for our spiritual advancement. Okay. Yeah. So when that's understood, then it's much. Because many of the things of the culture and all that also make more sense. Because it just mainly we see it's more for signifying what one is doing. One is if you have the thread means that you're fit for you can do sacrifice. Then depending on how you're wearing the thread, and that means what you are worshiping, who you are worshiping. So if the thread is on the right left shoulder and goes under the right arm, this signifies that you are worshiping something higher than what is here. The demigods, the Supreme Lord. If it is worn on the right shoulder and goes under the left arm, it signifies someone who worships ghosts, forefathers, and all this. And if it's just around the neck, hanging in the front, that signifies someone who worships humans. That, you know, he worships the king or worships someone like that. So that is why we just think, well, that's just there. But it's the main things that signifies, right? Just like when you have a sikha, it signifies someone who is performing worship, like that, or accepts the supremacy of the, you know, the Vedic culture, the Vedic process of worship, like this. So it's not, the importance of it is not the chanting. For use in chanting the Gayatri, that is done. The importance is signifying that this person is fit for sacrifice. And he has the adhikar to perform. Like that. That makes some sense. Anything else on Abhigamana?
Yes, in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can read the Gayatri Mantra because there is something very special in this part of the mantra, or because you just explained that it's not so much the point, but...
Which one? But which mantra is you saying?
Kama Gayatri.
Kama. No, but I said the Brahma Gayatri is not that as important for the spiritual advancement as the Kama Gayatri. The Brahma Gayatri is Vedic. The Kama Gayatri is Pancharatrik. So what I'm saying is that devotees many times mix up the two. They're two separate things. Just like the Gayatris and the holy name are different entities. So the same is that you have the Brahma Gayatri, which is the first line. That is Vedic. And then after that, the Guru Gaur and Kama Gayatri, they are Pancharatrik. So the Brahma Gayatri is simply supporting or helping the Pancharatrik Gayatris. This Pancharatrik are helping the holy name. Like that. Yeah, so it's not that the Brahma Gayatri is specifically helping the holy name. The Brahma Gayatri is supporting Pancharatrik, which is supporting the holy name. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Like that. Because many times it's brought out Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, before him the Brahma Gayatri wasn't given. Or they'll just, because they don't know the difference, they'll say, well, at least when I heard this, you know, before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, women didn't get the Gayatri. No, they always got the Gayatri. They always got the Pancharatra. They didn't get the Vedic. Because Vedic was specifically meant for the men who were going around and doing yajnas and things for other people. So you had to have Brahma Gayatri for that. But if you're not doing that, then there's no need of it. So as far as spiritual advancement, going back to Godhead, you need Brahma. I mean, you need the holy name and the Pancharatra mantras. The first line, the Gayatri, that's not significant. That's all. So that was done. Because even if the ladies have it, how you see it, they're not wearing the thread. So he wanted that his brahmacharis were wearing the thread, so that when people saw them, they just accepted them as Brahmins. Because if someone wore a thread, they were accepted as Brahmins. You know? But, and then if they weren't, then they weren't. But they weren't. No one looked at the ladies like that. They would only look at the brahmacharis out on the street like that. Because with the ladies, they look at the family and the situation and how they behave and all these things like that. And then with the men, they just simply look at the thread. They're not looking at your culture or anything. Just, I've been riding on the train from Calcutta to Mayapur. I've had people walk right up to me, just take my thread and start counting how many strings it had. Like that. Because they figure Malayas don't know what they're doing. They're not Brahmins. Like that. So, you know, there's no insult anyway. You know, they're thinking it's an insult. This guy's wearing a thread. Then when he counts it, sees that it's got the right number that he's expected to find in Bengal, then he's very happy. Like that. You know? So, they don't see the person. In India, they see the woman as a person. The men, they first just figure out what's the social strata. Because any woman, doesn't matter whether she's sweeping in the street or whether she's from, you know, the queen, they're all respected. Some, the queen, of course, more than the woman sweeping in the street. But they're all respected because they're all mother. But the men, they categorize them like anything. Okay, which varna you're coming from, then within the varna, which level you are. Like in South India, in the smartas, in the ayers, there's four different levels. So even your Brahman, still, then there's four levels with that, and then they'll be very careful that they only marry on their level. Like if you're from the second level and they're from the first level, they won't intermarry. It's below them why they would marry such a second-rate Brahman. Like that. So all over India, it's like that. First questions that they start having, if you go, is that. Westerners, they avoid this. They simply ask which country you're from. You know, like that. But if they're Indians, they always ask them all these things, isn't it? Because they want to know where you're coming from. If you're about, like, I know here, like, our what do you call it? You know, the manager here, wherever he goes, and they ask these things, and they find out he's from a Gaur Saraswat Brahmin family. So that's like top of the line. Even if all the communities in India of the Brahmins, Gaur Saraswat's on top of all of them. And then they're very impressed. Oh, this is a devotee that, you know, ISKCON must have something going for it, you know, and they take him very seriously. And when he can just simply based that he's from that family, then he can move with the big people, the rich people, the DMs, and all the different big, no problem. Simply for that. Then after that, then they'll start looking at the qualities. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saw it was necessary for the brahmacharis, since they were coming from all backgrounds, to give them this advantage. They had the thread, they accepted as Brahmins. But the women, were always being respected. So that's it was not necessary for the preaching. It's not necessary for the preaching. Like that. So that's the reason we wear thread. Otherwise, as far as Gaudiya Vaishnavas go, palm thread is not a significant or important thing. Like that. But in preaching, we're wearing. As Saraswatas, followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we're wearing. But otherwise, as Rupa Nupas, it's not so important. You know, Rupa and Sanatan were not wearing. You know, like that. Haridas Thakur was not wearing. You know? You see in our line, many of the Acharyas are not wearing. Baladeva was wearing. He's from a Brahmin family. Like that. And Vishwanath Chakravarti would wear. Narottam, I don't think. In a picture of him, he's not wearing. So like that. That's not the important. The important is the Pancharatra Gayatris, or the holy name. Like that. Does that mean, like any... Any other questions on that? Okay. So then the next is we'll go to the fifth part, the Swadhyaya. Because the details on the inside, the yoga and ijaya and abhigamana, upadana, collecting the paraphernalia, that will be given by Janani Vasudeva. So he has asked us to speak on this, the aspects of Swadhyaya. So Swadhyaya means study. Swa adhyaya. Adhyayana means to study. Swa means one's own study. So swadhyaya means where one studies the scriptures, hears, studies, and practices. This is very important. Just like the example is Krishna says in the Gita that knowledge is, he gives so many qualities of knowledge. One normally wouldn't think of them as knowledge. Right? Because you see that they're all practically applied knowledge. But that is knowledge. Krishna acknowledges, so you have two aspects of knowledge, jnana and vijnana. So in Vedic culture, vijnana is given importance. Jnana is, you know, that's the first step. But if you have jnana and no qualities, no character, and no vijnana, it's not considered very special at all. Not at all. Like that. So then, the whole idea is that we are worshipping the deity. We should also know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, know the proper Vaishnava of etiquette, and be practicing it. If we're doing that, then the deity is pleased. Then Krishna is happy. Otherwise, if we're not doing that, then Krishna is not really very happy. We're worshipping the deity, he's accepting our offerings, but it's not satisfying. Right? Just like a very intimate friend means that they know what you think, know what you like, and do things in a way that you like. And someone who's not does things in a way more like what they like. It's just like, well, I like this, and I want to make a friendship, so therefore I'll give him that. Right? But once we know the person before, we find out what he likes, then we give him what he likes. So someone who knows that all these aspects of chanting, observing the holy name, serving the holy dham, worship of Tulsi, service of the scriptures, worship of the scriptures, worship of the devotees, worship of prasad, and reception of guests, that these are very dear to Krishna. Because it's Krishna's place. The guests are coming to see Krishna. They're his guests. The devotees, other devotees in the temple are Krishna's servants. The prasad is Krishna's remnants. Tulsi Devi is his dear most servant who, without the leaves from there, he's not going to accept any offering to make. Then his place, where he lives, that's his dham. So that's very dear to him. The scriptures, they describe the knowledge of all this. Right? And the devotees, they explain all this also. And the essential process that we're qualified to actually worship the deity and elevate ourselves is chanting the holy name. This is all how Krishna sees it. This is what is dear to Krishna. So as we advance, then we are interested in what's good, nice for Krishna. The first stage is in devotional service is known as aropya bhakti. Right? It's a technical term which means that what I like, I offer to Krishna. Like according to my taste, I offer to Krishna. Then, as we become more advanced, then we think, well, what does Krishna like? And then we offer that to him. Like that. So then, that way, then it goes very nicely. So, as we advance in the process, then we start looking at what concerns Krishna, what makes Krishna happy. So then we see it's also, besides worshipping him, it's worshipping these other seven parts, these seven other aspects. The holy name, Tulsi, scriptures, Prasad, the devotees, guests, and the holy Dham. So those seven together, when we study about them, we practice the practices in relationship to them. Like that. For pleasing the Lord. That is Swadhyaya. So it's not just study, just not book knowledge, but you also have to practice it. So that is the position of Swadhyaya. So then the first part given here is serving the holy name. So Lord Chaitanya then, in his Shukshastaka, then the first verse, I mean the second verse, after explaining the whole Sampitan mission, Nam Nam Akari Bhakta, Nijitana Vashakis, then he's mentioning here is that I don't have any text for this holy name. The holy name is imbued with all qualities. Krishna's, all his potencies are there. The holy name is Krishna, non-different. Different. But I don't have a taste. So then the whole process must be around how to properly develop this taste. So then the pancharatric side of this is that here, Prabhupada mentions the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, however, may be chanted at any place and any time, and this will bring results very quickly. Yet even while chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, one may observe regulative principles. Thus, while sitting and chanting, one may keep his body straight, and this will help one in the chanting process. Otherwise, one may fall sleepy. Bhagavatam 7:15-31 purport. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we are teaching our followers to chant the Hare Krishna Mantra continuously on beads. Even those who are not accustomed to this practice are advised to chant at least 16 rounds on their beads, so that they may be trained. Otherwise, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorivā Sahishnuna, Amānina, Mādena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Once you chant the holy name of the Lord, in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Sada means always. Haridas Thakur says, Nirantara Naam Alao, chant the Hare Krishna Mantra without stopping. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 3:137 per point. So then, this chanting, then, is supposed to be chanted any time, any place, all the time. So that we may be accustomed, so we may chant at least a minimum fixed number of rounds. Then we use the beads. So then the beads, then there are some regulations, as Prabhupada mentioned, that we follow some. Okay, so that's basically is the, he doesn't quote from the, so the beads, generally, the tradition is that they are shaped in the form of a snake. You know, snakes are fat at one end, thin at the other. So the beads are also one side is big, it goes to the small on the other. So, and then connecting the two, the big bead and the small bead, that is the Meru bead, the what we call the Krishna bead. So that's Krishna and the gopis. So in chanting of mantra, then one never crosses Meru, one never crosses the Krishna bead. When one chants on one side, comes up and then goes back. Significance of this, then while once the one chanting the Gayatri, then on the hand, then two of the joints of the fingers are considered Meru. For us, then we are considering the second and third joint of the middle finger as Meru. And we're chanting on all the other sections. So the sun, the Brahma Gayatri is directed towards the sun. So the sun goes around Meru. You never see the sun cross Meru. It's just not done. It goes always around Meru. Like that, goes in that direction. So the same way is then when chanting the Gayatri, it goes around Meru. Then you come back. Like that. So one never crosses Meru. So in the same way is then Meru, for us it's Krishna, and the 108 beads are the gopis. So we go from one around to the other and then back. We never cross Krishna. Like that. So that is a important aspect. Then it's also the first 8 beads of the 8 principal gopis. So they're always given respect. So there's generally a little small tassel, you know, that is put after the first 8 beads. So then if it has 108 beads, has a Krishna bead, has this little tassel, then it's considered proper for chanting. Then we keep them covered. It should always be covered. Because otherwise, if they're not covered, then the Vedic rule is that all the various, you know, living entities that live in Antariksha, means in the space between the heaven and the earth, that means the Yakshas, Rakshasas, Pisachas, Gandharvas, Vididharas, Charmas, all that group, they can all come and steal the results. So naturally, they can't steal the spiritual results, but they come for the pious results. It means, except for devotees, they're people chanting pious results. So if whatever result they get from their japa will be taken away if where the counting is going on is not covered. Therefore, the hand is covered when we chant Gayatri, and the beads are covered while we chant. That is the reason. So we may say, well, you know, we're only interested in the spiritual benefit, not the pious. But that's good. That should be propagated, because those who are professing the social development proposals are interested in the pious results. They want to see economic development, they want to see nice social relationships and all that. They're looking at the pious side. So the conditioned nature also has an interest in the pious side. You know, we do like things to be comfortable. So if one doesn't cover these things, that aspect is stolen by these people. Even if one doesn't care, still it is not proper to have them hanging around. Right? Because they will disturb the mind like that. They're not known for, just like if you're trying to sit peacefully chanting japa, you don't keep some wild kids in the room, you know, who are not chanting and running around and yelling and screaming and all that unless you have to. That, but you wouldn't plan on that, right? Because, and they're not controlled, and they just give trouble. So we are not controlling all these Gandharvas, Vididharas. They're just running around and making trouble, trying to see if there's something that they can steal. So they just come to mind. Third aspect is, the reason this rule is established is because Krishna likes it this way. We always must understand that the bottom line in all these is that Krishna likes it this way. So then there are philosophical reasons and there's metaphysical reasons that come from this original point, which is this is how Krishna likes it. Right? That's just the way it is. Just like when you perform worship, one of the rules of one of the rules of deity worshipers is that you should not allow non-devotees to see you performing the worship, because otherwise then they make comments, they have doubts, it only increases their non-devotional side. So when we're doing the bathing of the deities, waking them, putting them to rest, offering the boga, all these things, except for when the Lord is in court. I mean, he's sitting, anybody can come and see. But all his private, intimate things is between him and the devotees. The curtain is closed. So in the same way, when we're chanting the Gayatri, when we're chanting our japa, then it's a private service. So it must be closed. As Krishna likes it, it maintains the intimacy. Right? You can want to just sit down on the rope out here and, you know, do something. You would, you know, take a nap or take your lunch or, you know, take your bath or different things, or just sit and have a confidential conversation with your friend. You wouldn't do it right on the road. Everybody walking past, stopping, looking, and checking out what you're doing and, you know, seeing what kind of soap you're using and stuff like that. You wouldn't do that. So Krishna doesn't like it. Why we don't like it, Krishna doesn't like it. So all these kind of things are done just with himself, him and his devotees. So the same way is it's just us and the name and our system of counting. And therefore it's covered. So covered means it's in the bead bag. Right? The bead bag itself is the cover. It's not that then you take the bead bag and stick it under your chudder. This is also very popular amongst the Gaudiyas. And about 20 years ago, I asked one of the Gaudiya sannyasis why they take the bead bag and put it under the chudder. And he says, well, actually, I said, is that a rule? Because the brahmacharis say, no, you must cover it with the chudder. The sannyasi said, no. He says, that's the brahmacharis' rule. They've made the rule up. Because the beads are covered by the bag. But when they're riding on train in public, then if people see them chanting, then they start harassing them. You know, the local Bengali punks start harassing them. So therefore, they put their beads under the chudder just so they don't know they're chanting. And in that way, then, they ride, you know, from Krishnagar to Calcutta, goes peacefully. So therefore, amongst themselves, they always keep it under the chudder so that they will not be bothered. So they may tell each other to keep it under there. But it has nothing to do with the chanting or any rule. That's just what's the brahmacharis have created this for their own convenience. Like that. So the bag itself is the cover. That is, you know, even a little known fact amongst the Gaudiya brahmacharis. So that is there, but the Gayatri, since it's not in the bag, that must be covered by cloth. So only if you're sitting in front of a deity, you know, in a closed place, then one may not need to cover like that. But if one is in an exposed place, one is not in front of the deities like this, then the Gayatri and the japa should always be covered. So in the chanting, then also is the, what do you call it? We're touching the beads with the thumb and the middle finger. The index finger is not touching the beads. That's specific because the index finger is, you know, it has many varieties of uses that the other fingers aren't used for so much. One is that if one's very upset or angry, one generally uses the forefinger to point at somebody, you know, in criticizing or cursing or like this. That's why you see in India when somebody points somewhere, they never just use the index finger. They use the whole hand. They use all four fingers. You say which way and they'll point one way and they'll use the whole hand. They never just use the index finger. So it's not considered cultured to point like that. It's considered, you know, that's the finger for cursing. If you're cursing, then you use the one finger. But if not, then like you point to somebody. Who knows? And you point to somebody, you use the open palm. You know, you don't point with one finger. So like that. So that aspect is there. Second is because it seems to be about the right size and dexterity that it's used in, you know, doing, how you say, deep nasal, I mean, deep nasal exploratory, you know, missions, you know, like that. So, you know, it has also, it finds its way into all kinds of places that are not always the most wonderful. So it's generally kept out of the beat bag. And the other ones then are used for the chanting. Yeah, Prabhupada stresses the chanting of 16 rounds, that the 16 is the minimum. That if one seriously wants to advance, one must chant 16. Because actually, one should chant more. One should always be chanting 24 hours. But minimum is 16 on the beads, like that. And the rest of it, you can chant on the beads, chant just like that. But that's a minimum. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur set that minimum. That one either chants 64, and, you know, does his temple services, or he can do full preaching and do 16. So that is the standard there. Below that is not recommended. It's anything one chants is good. So even someone is new, they're chanting one round, that's glorious. But when they become serious, if they want to situate themselves in Bhajana Kriya, then you have to chant 16, minimum. But Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, then however much you can chant, that is fine. But once you want to situate yourself in Bhajana Kriya, you must be 16, minimum. The Prabhupada mentions if they are not completed on the day, they must be completed the next day. Because if you don't complete your rounds, you're considered fallen. So the next day they have to be made up. Like that. One should take that very seriously. Okay. Then the beat should be handled respectfully, shouldn't be shaken really violently with all that, and kept in dirty places, or just, you know, swung around, or, you know, it's like they should be taken care of very nicely. The beads, we understand this is Vrindadevi, and you know, this is her bag and everything, her cloth, and so you should keep that, also the keep the bag clean, you know, like that. Then, because we should understand, this is what Vrindadevi is wearing, is the bead bag. Okay. Then the 10 offenses should be avoided. Then, you know, very quickly is the first offense is that to blaspheme the devotees who are dedicated their lives to preaching the holy name. So this is very essential. I mean, it's if when this offense is considered the worst of the offenses, it means the mad elephant offense. This can destroy the creeper. Others can slow it down, can distract. They generally will not destroy, but this one destroys. Now, why here? Why it's not said for one who offends the Uttamadhikaris? Why it doesn't say that? Or why it doesn't say just any devotee? Why does it specifically mean those who have dedicated their lives to preaching? Those who have dedicated their lives to preaching means the Madhyama. Right? Maybe an Uttama who is also acting as a Madhyama, or a Kanista who is acting as a Madhyama. It specifically means a Madhyama. Why? Because the Lord Kripa Shakti, to which he gives causeless mercy, comes through the Madhyamas alone. Not through the Kanistas, not through the Uttamas. One should understand this very clearly. When they complain, no, it's the Uttamas who are giving. Did Sukadev Goswami give anybody mercy when he was acting as an Uttama? Cite one example. He's walking in the village. The young kids are coming and taunting him. They're passing urine on him. He goes, gets something to eat. They come and throw things on it. Is he distributing his mercy to them? Is he just looking at them and they're getting forearmed and going back to Godhead? Or is he just oblivious? Because to him it's all Brahman. Whether you speak sweetly or you speak insulting, it's all just the tongue vibrate, the material tongue vibrates in the material air. And the tongue and the air are all Brahman. Take that. Whether he has something to eat or not, it doesn't matter. Because the body's Brahman, something to eat is Brahman. It's all Brahman. So is he giving mercy to anybody? No. Only when he comes and he's first of all recognized by the sages as someone advanced, two, then expected to speak, then he comes to the Madhya platform, and then does he give mercy? Only when he's acting as a Madhyama is the mercy flowing. When an Uttama acts as an Uttama, they're not giving any mercy. Right? It's very important to understand. Therefore, the Uttamadhikaris have a great taste in coming to the Madhyama platform and taking part in the Sankirtan mission. Because on the Uttama platform, no example is being set. Right? What example? Sukadeva setting an example we can follow. Right? You know, run around naked and, you know, just like that, we can do. Rishabdev, right? Pulling around in your own stool, right? But of course, stool must smell like roses. That's the first, you know, you can practice that, trying to make your stool smell like roses. Then you can follow that example. But in other words, the example they set, Vamsi does Babaji, you know? We can follow their example? No. So, therefore, where's the mercy? The mercy is when those persons come to the Madhyama platform, then they follow the rules and regulations like we're supposed to follow. Then we can do what they're doing. Right? That's the point. So what we see that the them doing, that they talk about, therefore it said one should, imitation means to follow what they're doing if it is different from what they say. Following in the footsteps is following what they say. Imitation is just doing what they do. Like Rupa Goswami says that one should practice devotional service. He doesn't say anywhere about nectar devotion that one should wear some little rag that he's found on the side of the road. So again, many people like to find little rags on the side of the road, put them on, and they think now I'm a big Goswami like the six Goswamis, like Rupa and Sanatana and all that. Simply because they imitate what he acted like, rather than follow his instructions. So the chanting becomes very much disturbed because the mercy of the holy name is given to us by the preachers, by the Madhyamas. So if the preachers are offended, then where is the source of mercy going to come from? Therefore, since that's the very source of our upliftment, to offend the Madhyamas, then will destroy our comfort. Like that. So it's a great offense. That's why it said the greatest, the mad elephant. Right? It means elephants by nature are not dainty. Right? You take an elephant into a nice, you know, boutique somewhere, there's going to be a problem. Now, if the elephant is mad, then guaranteed, 100% guaranteed results. The whole shop will be destroyed. So it's a very important point. Is one has to be very careful. This Bhaktivinoda prays. When will my mind lose the taste? Just will not want to hear criticism of devotees. We won't want to discuss just mundane things because the mind likes to hear. You know, as soon as you say, "Hey, did you hear?" and then immediately everybody's awake. You know, and if you're talking, you know, about the body, this, that, you know, then sleep. As soon as you say, "Hey, did you hear this?" and then immediately everybody's like, you know, hairs standing on end and, you know, everything like that, just waiting to hear the nectar, right? So he says, when will we give this up? And second offense is that to consider the names of the demigods to be equal to or independent of Vishnu's name. So you originally have Krishna, and then from Krishna expand all his devotees, the eternal associates. And then from them expand the material demigods. So the potencies that are in the demigods are there, the original devotees, the suris. Om Tad Vishnu Param Padagam Sada Pasyanti Spurayaha. The suris. These are the great devotees. They live with the Lord. Means when Karana Dakshaya Vishnu is there, then he's surrounded by these devotees. They're there, eternal associates and all that. Then when he expands and the universe comes as Garbha Dakshaya, they're also there. Right? Then it's said, and this is before the creation. Right? So in the beginning there was him and him alone. But he had all these associates. Then the Kushishuk explains how the whole material universe was created. But who's doing it? The sages are doing it. So where'd they come from? Nothing's created yet. They came with him. There's eternal associates. So the potencies that they have go into the demigods, the material demigods, the mundane demigods, those posts. Like Indra has a post. There's a particular power of management that is he is imbued with, that has come through the Lord's energies. So the energies are always subservient to the Supreme Lord. So let alone the Supreme Lord, they're subservient to the devotees. That's why I said the pure devotees, they have all, that means spiritual masters, the sum total of all the 33 million demigods. Because the demigods, their potencies are coming from the devotees, the eternal associates. So the spiritual master, he's representing that internal potency from which all the demigods have come from. That. Therefore, he's respected. It's a very important principle. Sometimes you say, well, he's not respectable for me. But then where does the principle come that all women are respected as mother? They may not be our particular mother, but they're respected because they're somebody's mother. And they have that mood of mother. They have that potency. The motherly potency is there. Therefore, that's respected. So in the same way, any devotee is respected because a big devotee, and especially advanced devotees who are preachers, they are respected because they are preaching to somebody, maybe not to us. Maybe they are not our guide, but somebody's guide. So that has to be respected. That's the principle. Like that. We may like, we may not like, but they still must be respected. And if we are equals, or that other person's junior to us, then we may have something, we may give some direction. But if not, we can't just criticize. Krishna will tolerate. We may think we have the right, but that's our pride. We have to be very careful. Yeah. So these demigods, they come from they're expanded from the devotees of the Lord. So they're very far removed from being as powerful as the Lord. But because they have the quality, the particular quality of the Lord, they are respected. They are not disrespected. But we understand their position compared to Krishna. Third offense is to consider the spiritual master material and therefore to envy his exalted position. So we can't just consider that somebody wasn't our own spiritual master, but anybody's spiritual master. You know, it's like, well, I made them a devotee, or I knew them when they were bhakta so-and-so, or, you know, I saw them, or, you know, they made so many mistakes. Because the point is potency is potency. A live wire, you may say, well, aluminum wire is aluminum, it's not very high class and all that, it's like a copper wire and all that, but just go ahead and touch it and see if 220 volts doesn't get you. Because the point is Krishna is using those persons to give that mercy. We may agree or not. We may understand the philosophy or not. We may understand the culture or not. But the fact is there. Otherwise, if it wasn't there, how is it since the time of Srila Prabhupada? You know, it's been more than 20 years, 22 years. And this mission is expanding. People are joining. They're becoming advanced. Because that mercy that Prabhupada is giving, the mercy that Lord Chaitanya is giving, is coming through somebody. people are being benefited. This is a very important point. So we cannot offend the spiritual master. We think he's ordinary. Like this. Because the point is you represent. It's just like the viceroy is not the queen or the king. The viceroy of the king is in no way. He's just another guy like everybody else. But because he is representing the king, then you better treat him like you would treat the king. And if you don't, you're in trouble. That's simple. Just that simple. That potency is there. So if that potency could be invested in a person from a mundane king, why that potency cannot be invested from Krishna? Right? Why that cannot be invested? If the python sadhu can have 22 gurus, right? One of them's a bee, you know, one of them's an ant. One of them's a prostitute. One of them's a little girl. You know? I mean, it's like this. He has so many. How is it he's gaining spiritual knowledge from them? So the mercy of the Lord is flowing through. How is it that it can't flow through anyone else? Right? So we have to be very, very careful that in this we understand the what is absolute. Right? This is generally the difficulty, is this simple word in English called absolute. Right? So, absolute in the American, or at least in the English dictionary, generally means, you know, total, you know, absolute power, position, perfectness, anything like that. Nothing can go wrong. Right? Because that is what people want in the material world. They want to be the absolute top controller and enjoyer and everything. And nobody else can say anything or get in the way. And that's the ideal, right? You scramble yourself to the top and you're the big guy and that's it. Because that is the mundane understanding of what is absolute. So we have to be very careful to not use this, project this onto a spiritual philosophy, which is something completely different. In the spiritual philosophy, then the absolute means what is in connection with absolute becomes absolute. The example is given iron and fire. You never see Prabhupada give another example. But I'm always amazed that devotees ignore this example. You can even say it, and they'll say, yes, but, and then take it to some mundane conception. Iron and fire. Iron is iron. You put it in the fire, it becomes fire. No intelligent person will touch that iron because they know it's fire. You can take it out of the fire. You can put it back in the fire. Right? The moralistic side is when someone has sinned, they can never be purified. Right? Why is that important? It is very important for a person with very minimal faith. Because if I have minimal faith, that means I'm not convinced of the philosophy, so convinced of everything. So therefore, if someone else is disobeying and having a good time and getting away with it, I'm thinking, well, why not me? Then if I say, no, 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 but once they've done something wrong, that's it, it's finished. Then I can be satisfied. Oh, okay. Then it's worthwhile for me to continue, even though I'm not as fixed as I would like to be. I also have those desires. But I won't follow him because, you know, I want to be there, you know. In the judgment day, I want to be standing on the right side. I don't want to be pointing to the left. So like that, we have to be very, very careful because iron and fire means you're in the fire of Krishna consciousness. That's God. That's absolute. You take out of the fire, you're not absolute. And then they can go back again into the fire and again become absolute. So it's a very important element. So this therefore to consider the spiritual master to be ordinary, then it cannot be. Especially when they're properly situated and they're in the fire, Krishna consciousness. Fire is fire. That fire is Krishna. So that must be seen. Okay, and that. What time is it now? Okay, so now it's 12:30. Any questions on this? Or otherwise, we'll end it and we'll continue tomorrow. With you. Yes.
We'd like to ask about the tradition of chanting on beads.
The tradition of chanting on beads.
Yeah, what does it start? Is it with the Chaitanya before?
No, beads have always been.
Oh.
It's always been. Beads are always, because you can count them. The whole idea is you should count the number of rounds that you're doing. That should always be there. Because then you know that you're doing a minimum, right? See, in the spiritual realm, they'll always do the maximum. So they don't have to worry about doing the minimum. They're always doing the maximum. But in the material world, we get distracted. So then there's a worry that we won't do the minimum. Just like I'll say, well, I'll just chant. But if you were just chanting without beads, probably after a half hour, or, you know, 1 hour, you'd figure I've done, you know, some, and I've done 1 lakh of rounds, you know. So the beads are there to just to show us, you know, what we've chanted, what we've actually done. Like that.
They're there for sadakas.
Huh?
They're for sadakas.
Yeah, they're for sadakas. And then we see also the uttamas when they come and take the position of preachers. They also follow the rules of the sadhakas. Like that. But to the degree they can follow them, just like Haridas Thakur is taking the rule of a sadhaka, and he is chanting the holy name. So that he chants the holy name, he chants on beads, he chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know, he lives a simple lifestyle. These are all the examples we can take from him. He doesn't have to do that. He'll just be chanting anyway. Whether he uses beads or not, he's going to chant. What we can't imitate is 3 lakhs. Right? Like that. Because you hear him just saying, chant. Only to that one prostitute at Benapole, then he surrendered. Then he told, you chant nicely. And then she chanted like what he chanted. But other than that, he just says, chant. You're not telling 3 lakhs. So we must understand what to be followed. So what the preachers are doing, the acharyas are doing, then that's why they're called acharyas. They teach by example. So what they do is what we should be following, according to our position, according to our realization.
Why we cannot chant Hare Krishna mantra? For example, I know that tomorrow I must go somewhere and the train is difficult to chant, yeah, and today I have more time. Why cannot chant today more round
for tomorrow.
Next yeah,
oh,
day?
Interesting. You're asking why I can't today chant more rounds for tomorrow.
Yes.
Like I'm going to go traveling, it's very difficult and all that. As long as you can do all your sleeping for tomorrow today, and do all your eating for tomorrow today, go to the toilet for tomorrow for today, take your bath for tomorrow for today, you know, today, like that. It all goes together. So our spiritual health needs to be also done every day. This is just the way Krishna does it. Because these pastimes are nitya, they go on daily. So every day, then we have to perform the certain aspects. You know, like every day, Mother Jashoda wakes him up and is affectionate. She could just say, well, tomorrow I'm going to be busy, so I'll show double the affection today. No, every day he wants to see Mother Jashoda wake him up. Every day he wants to see Mother Jashoda feed him. Every day he wants to take the cows out. Like that. Does that make any sense?
But we chant, if I not finish today, I tomorrow must finish.
Yeah, it's just like if you missed lunch, then you just say, ah, oh, forget it. No, you eat later. You know? So eating must go on. You know, you catch up. You know, it's just like you something happened. You're very busy all night. But the next day, what are you doing? You say I'm catching up on. I have to catch up on my sleep. Or you get behind in your work. I have to catch up with my work. Like that. It's so like that it works. Does that make any sense? Or? Kind of. Motomoti. Yes.
You said the offended Madhyama guy is very dangerous.
Yeah.
Does it mean that offending Uttamakara is not so dangerous?
No, offending Uttamakara is worse, but the thing is, an Uttama acting as an Uttama, you won't know as an Uttama. You won't know who they are. Right? If you saw Vamsidas Babaji, or you saw, you know, Sukadev Goswami, would you be able to recognize him as a Mahabhagavat? You understand? Would you be able to recognize? No. Therefore, we recognize the Madhyama, and then we offend him. That's considered bad. Because the other ones we're not seeing. Because generally, the Uttamas, very few Uttamas act as Uttamas around the preaching tradition. Generally, you want to do that through the forest. You won't find them in the city. Why are they be in the city? The point is, any devotee, but it's specifically saying preachers, because the Uttamas are going to come as preachers, as Madhyamas. You won't find just Uttamas just loitering around on Oxford Street, you know, just checking out and looking through the windows, stuff like that. Because, you know, if they're walking down the street with all clothes on, then the police are going to come and pick them up, you know. Sukadeva was walking down Oxford Street, the police would pick him up, you know. So the point is, you don't have to worry about that. All Uttamas that we will see are going to be coming as Madhyamas. And all Madhyamas that we will see will also be as Madhyamas. And by the way, our Sankirtan tradition is geared, even our Kinistas, you will see them doing the activities of Madhyamas. In other words, don't offend devotees. That's the point. Yes, sir.
We're talking about in Madras according to our tradition.
Yes.
And what is the way to free ourselves from the body conscious of life?
Yes. Mataji's question is that someone will do, we have to dress according to our position. So then, let us say, gave example, if someone is doing business, they have to dress very nicely to meet business associates, everything. So how to keep from getting overwhelmed with that or get in the bodily concept? So Krishna gives the answer in the Gita is that you perform your duties, because if you're doing business, you have to perform those duties, what will be favorable for that, but you have to do it for Krishna, without desiring the results. So we dress up very nicely, we're not thinking, because I dressed up so nicely, I'm really going to impress them today. It's just, you know that one has to dress nicely for them to be pleased, and one just does that. Now, if they're impressed or not, that's up to Krishna, because the result is his. He sanctions the result. And it's theirs anyway. And the result from that, either the business thing doesn't work, we live with that, or the business contact works, and then, you know, benefits there, we know that's Krishna's. So it's very important to understand that I'm doing this because this is what is necessary for the preaching. Like this, for doing our activities, whatever it is. Because we're doing business, not just for ourselves also. We're doing business because we have to generate funds, we have to maintain the family needs devotees, right? Devotees have to be taken care of. We have the ability to generate income. We do that, use that for the devotees. Not only that is that those who are doing business, they generate all the economic level. And then they give in charity to the temple, they give to the Brahmins, they do social work with that in the devotee community. You know, I mean, we're always worried about doing social work outside. It must social work must be for karma. It can also be for devotees. You know, we've seen so many communities in India. These communities in India do stuff like that. Like if there is a community and some girl loses her husband, has no other support, everyone from the community will put in something. Small amount. You know, have a big community, everybody gives 1 rupee or 10 rupees a month. It adds up. And then this girl is taken care of. That. Or a new person comes into the community. You've seen at least was followed in many of the Marwari community, is that everyone in the community would give the person, you know, 1 rupee or a couple of rupees and 1 brick. Right? So with a brick, he'd build a house, because, you know, there's thousands of Marwaris there. He builds his house, and with the, you know, few thousands of rupees that he gets, he invests that, so it hurts his business, and because he's a Marwari, then it works, and it makes money. So it didn't cost anybody in the community anything. And he, the man, just, he had his capital, he has his house. He's set up. What else does he need? Little things like that they do. And that makes community. Community, the word, see, we always use it as a community. But it's also used as meaning community. That it's a group of people who have the same value. They have the same values, same goals, same methodologies. That is called community. So community happens when there is that similarity. And then they want to, and they help each other. So that's also a very, very simple thing. Okay. So these aspects are there. So this is all coming from those who generate the money. Right? They get the money, so then they are able to give it. And then managers may also collect funds, and then they use it also for the benefits of others. Brahmins are given in charity. If they get more than what they require, they also give it away to others who need. Like that. So it all works very nicely. So one sees that this is his duties and does it for Krishna. So how much, if he could do, you know, without overspending time, can do business and make a lot of money, it's no problem, because Krishna's movement can use so much money. He can maintain his family, and he can do so many nice things. So there's no problem in making money. It's just that one should understand the result belongs to Krishna. Like that. That's the thing. The family belongs to Krishna, the results belong to Krishna. Then one can do that. Like Prabhupada mentioned, one can, when he mentioned the Sankirtan devotees, says they can dress, if they have to wear kami clothes, they can dress as, what's it, I think he says, fine, up-to-date gentlemen. Right? He noticed he used the word gentleman. He didn't say fine, up-to-date punks. You know, he said fine, up-to-date gentlemen. So whatever, however a gentleman dresses today, it's whatever that can be worn. Like that. Yes.
Alright, to that question, I think a lot of people fall in the trap. We were talking about dressing differently from the devotee.
Uh-huh.
If you dress as a devotee when you're doing business, but when you come home, you should change your devotional clothes.
Yes.
Do your devotional activities. So people fall in the trap and they do it day after day, week after week, and then they lose it that way. But if they do it just as a type of business, then they do the activities spiritually after that.
That's a nice one. So that, because it's, see, is that the business, the, like, let's say we're wearing a suit to do business, but that's to do business. That's not to do our devotional activities. So that's not our identity. Our conditioned identity is that of a businessman. And, but our sadhak roop, our sadhak form of the aspiring devotee is that of wearing our devotee and other things like this. So when we come home, we're supposed to act as a devotee, not as a businessman. So therefore, in the home, then we will wear our devotional clothes and these kind of things like that. Maybe relax, comfortable, but we don't just keep those on like that. That's a good point, because then that actually establishes what's the real identity. Otherwise, then one gets in the trap. Well, it's easy, it's comfortable, it's practical. Especially business persons can get into this, because business persons, they need to be very pragmatic. It means, I do this, I get the result immediately. So they get in the habit of just reducing things down to the bare bones that it actually works, no frills. So the thing is I have this on, and it's practical to wear it. But that is there as long as it depends on what one's results are. Right? So since the results are spiritual, then it's better to identify in this way. Then you're comfortable in that. Right? Then you go to the temple, you go to this, that, go to the different functions, you wear devotional clothes. When you have to go out in the business, then you do that. It's not a problem. Remember in Bulgaria, there's one devotee there, he was a professor at a university. He headed the department artificial intelligence, you know, computers and all that kind of stuff, and working on all this physics and that. So he became a devotee. So, you know, slowly, the years would preach, and made so many of the students in the class devotees. Then, after the communist thing fell apart, then they could establish a temple. They could register society and establish a temple. So just one block away from the university, they got a house. And so the devotees are just him and the class students. So he's the temple president, and then they're the temple devotees. And they're all, you know, they're all living in their homes and this and that. And one or two devotees living at the temple. I think those who do the puja. But he and everybody else lives at their home. So everybody comes in the morning in their coats and everything, attends the whole morning program and all that. Then after breakfast, they do a little bit of, you know, whatever it is, you know, you do some whatever management has to be done for this and that. And then he and everybody else in the temple put on their karmi clothes, walk around the corner, go to the university, and now he's the professor, and they're all the college students, you know. Like this. And then in the evening, when school is finished, then they all come back, put up their dhotis and that. Now it's the temple president and they're in the temple devotees. Like that. Like that. You know, going on. So that identity, then one feels very happy. And then they go out on Harinams and everything like that. But whenever he does any of his other things, then you know, they all go as professors and college students and like that. So that's a good point. Very good. Yes.
One point, what I was thinking about this, is that in Chaitanya time, this dhoti was a common dress of people, yeah? Hmm. And for example, in my country, if in village I am going in dhoti, it's all absolute surprised and not acceptable for no one, yeah? Yeah. It is something new for people, and they don't accept this. This Chaitanya not change dress. And not this effect, absolute different effect of dhoti in Chaitanya village and in Latvian village, for example. How it is? It's not effect, not work like Chaitanya wants this, maybe, yeah?
No, what we're discussing here is that what is it, how you feel is more your identity. So when you're in your own house or in your own environment, a controlled environment, then you live that according to your own culture, which means a devotional culture. And if you have in moving in the outside culture, then it will not be, you know, good for preaching or in some way accepted. Then that adjustment may be there, but that's for their benefit. Our benefit is following our own culture as devotees. So in our own home or in our own environment, we have farms and our own farm, then we do as we like. And when we're out, we may. But as things expand, then we can always establish ourselves nicely. You know? If everybody's going to be coming to our house in such a small village, then one may be more careful. And then slowly one preaches, and then you make the, if it's too small, you make the whole village to these, then no problem. Like I think, was it? Was it? Italian. He does the he did design for the Somali, makes furniture. Machiato, yeah. So one day I think he got a book or something. Grand Bhagavad Gita or something, and he read and he thought this made sense. So in their family they were still following the old traditional, you know, Jewish kind of family, you know, the grandparents and that are the heads and all this kind of thing. So they're all at the dinner table and all that and eating and all. And then he brings up the point of this, you know, he's just had this Gita and all this and very nice, gives all these nice things. And you know, he's really thought about it, and he'd really like to practice this and become a devotee. And so everybody in her family heard it very nicely and all that. And then they decided, well, you know, it's very good. He thought it was that. So they all decided to become devotees. So then everybody's, you know, devotees. And then the whole thing, so you do try that also. If it's a small enough village, then you just make everybody in the village devotees. And if it's a little bit bigger, then, you know, a few others, then. Because if they say devotees are nice and for that, they respect. And that's in America, and traveled across America in, you know, kind of like early 70s. Went through the mid part of America, no one had ever seen devotees there. And they just took us as priests. We all, you know, were wearing robes and this. And they just thought we were some kind of religious priests. They didn't know what, or didn't know anything about Indian religions or that, but they just took us as priests. But so as long as we acted nicely in this and that, then they accepted us like that. So that also is, one has to see the environment. Anything else? Okay, so we'll end here. Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai.